Is it okay to reserve multiple dates even though you won't use them at a campsite? When is it okay to cancel? When is it not? We've got some new data that shares how people and how campgrounds feel about this and a whole lot more. This is the RV Miles Podcast. Welcome to episode number 396 of RV Miles. I'm Jason.
And I'm Abby. And we are two RVers who, along with our three boys, have been crisscrossing North America on one epic road trip. Here at RV Miles, we talk all things RV and outdoors, from industry news to camping reports, our national parks, and so much more.
The dirt, the campground, campsite finding app, and dump station, all kinds of stuff finding app, The Dirt, D-Y-R-T. If you're not familiar with that, has released their latest edition of their annual camping report. And this has become really one of the biggest studies that we have now to talk about the changes in camping over the years, especially in this sort of post-pandemic era. The KOA study is the other big one. And I covered this on the news video for last week, but I thought on this episode, we could dive a bit into some of the stats that I didn't get to talk about on that episode and introduce Abby to some of these stats and get her reaction to some of these, because she has not read or seen any of this. I have not shared any of this with her, and I just kind of want to get her reaction to some things because I think they're really interesting, and it'll be nice to hear what, coming from fresh ears, this does.
What the average not watching the news person, the average bear, thinks about this. Before we dive in, I want to just bring up the fact that it still sort of like boggles my mind that we have, it's 2026, and that a report,
she knows it's not bottles. I just have to say that.
Let them. Let them. As Mel Robbins says, let them. Okay. Just the fact that it's 2026 and we only have a report like this that's 5 years old.
Yeah.
And we've had an industry as old as the hills that has had people camping and campgrounds changing and, you know, industry changing for decades, but we've never really had a snapshot of what's going on. And it's wild that it took the pandemic.
Yeah. KOA's survey has been going on for 10 years, but I find there's...
It still has a hook of being a KOA survey. I mean, it's, yeah, right? Like, it's still sort of...
It's supposed to be camping in general. What I don't love about KOA's survey, is KOA survey is about the same amount of people. Maybe somebody's going to hear this and correct me if I'm wrong. But from what I understand, digging in to the methodology of these a bit, KOA surveys about 5,000 households across America. The Dirt surveys about 5,000 camping households. So, you know, already with, you know, the KOA report, they're trying to find how many people camp and how many don't. And that's important information, I guess. But like, once you've moved those people that don't camp out of the system, well, okay, now that you have a much smaller group of people, a much, much smaller sample size than the Dirt report has. And the Dirt also does a sampling of the overall population to get a couple answers like that. But mainly this is a report focused on camping households. And 5,000 households, there are a couple of people in the comments from that news video that were like, that doesn't seem like very many people, with there being 82.4 million Americans camping in 2025. Spoiler alert, that's the headline. But actually, statisticians would say that that's a really, really good sample size. Often a report like this is going to have like 1,500 respondents. So they would say that that's like, I think, less than 1.5% margin of error. So,
I would say too, with the KOA report, that probably the households they're reaching out to are through their own database of people.
Specifically done separately.
Okay. Yeah. They do hire out, I think, a third party.
Both of these are hired by a third party. This is These are done by statisticians, by, you know, statistics firms. These are not reports that these companies are, you know, surveying their own customers. They're trying to get a feel for, camping in general overall. So again, the headline, 82.4 million people camped last year. That is down from the high of 84.8 in 2023. So it's slightly down.
That's surprising that 2023 is the highest year, because I would have thought it would be 2021 or 2022.
Well, there was still, during the early days of the pandemic, you know, 2020, certainly everything was down. 2021 and 2022, a lot of people were still being very, very cautious, even though the camping was seeing a boom.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where my mind was going, was that because everyone was being cautious still, we were seeing sort of hotels and sort of a more traditional vacations down. But everyone who had been hotels, who had been going to resorts, who had been flying on planes, they were all gravitating towards RVing and camping because they could be enclosed in a space and they felt that it was a safe way to travel.
I think by 2023, you kind of have the overlap of people that had just not been traveling at all because they were concerned, and there's big outdoor boom. I think that that's the point where they sort of, you know, mesh together a lot. And, you know, again, that was the highest year, but we're talking about a very slight decline of 2 million people since then, over, you know, 82.4 million. The lesson I think here is that camping has stayed mainstream. It has not been something that people did during the pandemic and then decided they don't like and aren't doing anymore.
Well, it depends on if you believe YouTube or not. I mean, because there are videos out there saying that millions of RVs are being dumped into the used market right now. So I guess maybe it's just 2.4, perhaps. Although, again, we're talking camping. And we all know that camping can mean...
it's a lot of things.
Beyond just... and I think it's important to say in this particular study, too, we are talking more than just RVers. So we are talking tent campers. We're talking car campers.
It does include glamping. So glamping you would define as a style of camping at a RV resort of some sort that is going to be things like yurts, but not like... traditional cabin.
So do you count those KOA cabins that don't have bathrooms as glamping, or do you count them as cabins?
I think those, you know, and of course these definitions are a little bit loose, but I think those fit, into the glamping era. And so I guess it would include some sorts of cabins, but not like a full on cabin that is fully equipped with
a house,
right?
Pool.
That would not be included, but pretty much everything else would. RV Miles is sponsored by Blue Ox. Chances are you've seen them on the road. That's because Blue Ox designs and manufactures the best towing products in the industry. Just look around. You'll find them on highways and campgrounds and anywhere you find people traveling through the great outdoors. From award-winning tow bars, base plates, and brakes to a full line of weight-distributing hitches, fifth wheel hitches, receiver hitches, and adjustable ball mounts. With Blue Ox, towing doesn't have to be a drag. Visit BlueOx.com for more information. With the new year here, a lot of us are planning new trips, new routes, and maybe even a whole new season of RV travel. But if you own an RV, you also know that repairs are part of the adventure, and they get expensive fast. When something breaks, the last thing you want is confusion about how much it should cost and if it's covered by your RV protection. That's why we like wholesale warranties. Instead of pushing one plan, they work with multiple providers to help you find coverage that actually fits your RV and how you travel. Plus, they take the time to explain what's included, what's not, and help you avoid paying for coverage you don't need. In an industry that can feel overwhelming, Wholesale Warranties is dedicated to making coverage clear, reliable, and fair. So as you head into a new year of adventures, consider getting a personalized quote at wholesalewarranties.com, where you can learn more, lock in coverage, and let them protect your rig so you can focus on the road ahead, not the repair bills. Let's just take a couple of these stats because I think some of them are really interesting. Six camping trips was the median number of outings campers reported in 2025. Oh. So, you know, of course, that's going to be skewed by people that are full-time or people that travel just a ton. Campers by age group, Four out of five campers over 65 say they plan to or already do camp more during retirement. 19.5% of campers is the highest age group, ages 35 to 44.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
We've aged out of that group.
We have aged out of that group.
Oh, my God.
We are now in the 45 to 54 group, which was 18.1%.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I don't know how I feel about
that. I know. It's absolutely insane.
Do I start getting a discount at the restaurants? Oh, right. The 10-cent coffee.
49.7% travel with dogs and 4.9% with cats. And they did say that campers also reported camping with parrots, guinea pigs, hamsters, horses, rabbits, and ducks.
One of our children will be the duck statistic someday.
I have a very vivid memory of us being at a campground and a schoolie pulled in. And this was after we were no longer in our schoolie.
Yeah.
But a schoolie pulled in, they parked and set up and everything. And then out hops a couple chickens.
Mm-hmm.
At a campground, these chickens free roamed their campsite.
They were free range eggs. I mean, in every sense. And I mean, we've seen in the campground, obviously dogs, cats, potbelly pig, chickens. We've seen lizards. We've seen snakes.
As pets. We've seen some of those things as not pets as well.
Yes, and that's usually when I run away.
We've seen a potbelly pig before.
We have. I think we've actually seen more than one.
Yeah.
That was quite trendy. I feel like we went through a period of travel where we ran into several who had them. Like, it was just the thing to travel with there for a while. People just like to bring along their special friends.
So the most interesting stats in this report to me, this is kind of what I wanted to be the thrust of our conversation on the show today, are about booking campsites. And, you know, that has been a big conversation over the course of the last several years since the pandemic boom. Is it harder? Is it easier to book campsites? And then lots and lots of questions about whether it is, you know, okay to book campsites on days that you're not going to use them or you're not sure that you're going to use them. When is it okay to cancel? The number of people that are no-showing. So the Dirt asks some really interesting questions in this category. And the first one is about finding available camping. And this is a stat that they have tracked over the course of the years of this report. 52% of people who booked a site last year said it was difficult because campgrounds were full. So that is a slight improvement over last year. 56.1% last year said that they had troubles booking because campsites were full. So slight improvement, but we're on the high end of the years that they have asked this question, because in 2023, the biggest year for camping, 45%.
Oh.
2022 was actually the worst with 58%. But you got to imagine, though, that in that time, a lot of campsites have also been built, right? Mm-hmm. There have been a lot more campsites that have come onto the market in this time frame, because a lot of campgrounds have expanded. A lot of private equity type corporations have bought campgrounds and expanded them. And there are definitely a lot more campsites on the market, even as there are more campers.
It doesn't really account for 24-25, but I'm wondering if the 22-23 also impacts those returning back to the office. And so some of the loss of the remote work, the sort of digital nomad.
And it could have been in that worst year of 2022
mm-hmm.
that people, even though maybe there were fewer people camping than there are now by ever so slightly, that those people were camping more because they were working remotely or what have you.
Yeah, but it doesn't really account for 24-25 because that trend is continuing.
Yeah.
And even more so now, people are returning back into the office. Companies are having people come back into the office. So I find it interesting that if what you're talking about, more campgrounds are being built, more people are getting into the campground game, that 2023 sees this dip, but then we go into 2024, 2025, And obviously 2024 saw less people camping than 23 and 25. And yet they continue to say that that was a hard year to find camping.
Another thing might be that some of these people that have started camping in the last 5 years have really started to learn the ways you need to game the system in order to, you know, the whole thing where a lot of people will go on recreation.gov and book a full 2 weeks when their window opens because they need to book those last days. It's just the way people do it. I mean, it's
We know.
Yeah,
I mean, we know.
Well, and that gets into the next question that I think is really interesting to me is that they specifically ask folks, is it okay to reserve sites on multiple dates, knowing all of them won't be used for the purpose of providing options and flexibility?
Oh,
and surprisingly, camping property owners are more likely to say yes than campers.
Well, yeah, they are because they get the money. Yeah, I mean, they don't care.
Well, I mean,
I don't, a lot of them
give full refunds. So if you do cancel and it makes it harder for them to book it.
I guess it depends on. No, actually, I don't know that that's true with private campgrounds. I think they keep 50% at this point. If we're talking like 24 hours before.
Well, yeah, like 24 hours before. But we're also this is not just about 24 hours before. We're talking about, canceling several weeks out. So they broke it down.
Sure. But if they're canceling several weeks out, look. They're going to book that site.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if we're talking last minute cancellation, they're getting the 50% off those people. Maybe they're going to book it last minute. Someone's going to come in for an overnight, but they're still getting the money without really any like overhead for those people.
That's fair.
Okay. In that respect, they love when they look on the calendar and they see, look, we're booked solid.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't have to think about this. I don't have to spend any money to advertise our campground. I hire out my seasonal. I'm good to go. Let's, you know, and if people cancel, they cancel, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to fill it, you know?
So 49.8% of property owners say it's not okay to reserve sites. So it is pretty close. It's pretty split.
Yeah, that's pretty split. So that's
about,
a 50.
About an even half says that it's not okay to reserve sites on dates that you don't plan on using them.
Yeah.
36% said yes, as long as you cancel well in advance. And 14% just said yes in general. Of campers, 61.3% said under no circumstances. 35.5% said yes, as long as they cancel in advance. And 3.2% just say it's okay in general.
Well,
so most people don't think it's okay to book sites that you're not going to use. So listen, there are a lot of people that do this. And there are people in our community that do this, that will book, you know, an extra 2 days that they're just not sure if they're going to use and then just not use them.
I want to talk to those 160 people that said that. I want to talk to you.
Nice, like, quick math.
We need to have a conversation about camping etiquette. Now, I'm looking over.
Don't.
No, I see something that says cancellation by age
group. I'm about to go to that.
Okay, because I would like you to go to that because I'm a little curious.
Yeah, yeah. So cancellation by age group. They've actually broke this up.
Okay.
This is, you know, actually asking folks to be honest about what they would do, I assume. 18 to 24-year-olds, first of all, are the least likely to make a reservation in the first place. So those are the people that are most likely to show up last minute or to be boondocking, that sort of something like that.
Okay.
25 to 34-year-olds, they call ghosters, are the most likely to no show.
Hey, totally. Yeah.
35 to 44-year-olds, which is no longer us apparently, are the most improved, biggest positive change in cancellations since last year. 45 to 54-year-olds, us now, are the most likely to arrive at a campsite at least 1 day late.
Oh.
I feel a little seen there.
I apologize. For that. that feels on brand.
55 to 65-year-olds are the most likely to leave a campsite at least 1 day early.
A storm is coming. They must go.
And 65 plus are the most likely to cancel at least 2 days in advance. They're the ones that are
so responsible.
The planners. They're really the only ones that look good in here.
But no, actually, can we talk? No, I think 18 to 24 year olds look really good. So the bookends.
Yeah.
The bookends that are always fighting with each other. Let's point that out, by the way. The boomers are always up against the kiddos. The kiddos don't make the reservations. They're not causing any trouble. If there's somewhere for them, they'll snag that place that maybe the boomers canceled last minute. So not last minute, excuse me, 2 days before. And maybe the 18 to 24s, they're going to roll up in there. They're going to grab a spot, or they're going to go out and they're going to boondock. While our responsible 65 and older friends are going to cancel, or perhaps our 18 to 24 year old friends, maybe they're going to grab that one night that Jason and I just couldn't make it to in time. Maybe they'll take that first night for us or something. You know, I always hate categorizing anybody, but when I think back to my own 25-year-old self, 25 to probably 27-year-old self, single Abby.
You were most likely to ghost.
I definitely ghosted a lot. So there are a lot of ghosts in Chicago. Let's put it that way.
More in a moment, but first, this episode is sponsored by eTrailer. Ever feel like finding the right RV part is like searching for a needle in a haystack? Enter eTrailer.com. Whether you're puzzled about which product is right for you or how to install it, eTrailer has you covered. Their U.S.-based customer service is available by chat or phone 7 days a week. And with expert Q&As, helpful articles, and tons of reviews and install videos, you'll tackle any RV problem with confidence. eTrailer strives to get their hands on everything they sell, and their website is full of overviews, reviews, buying guides, and tutorials. And it's not just RV parts. It's towing and vehicle accessories, camping supplies, and more. Head to the link in the description to get free shipping on orders over $99.
So here's an interesting thing. Last summer, there was a viral TikTok that went around that was asking, what's the minimum amount of equipment that you need to hold a first come, first serve campsite? So the dirt actually pulled on this exact question, and they gave you some options. A, you need a tent or a vehicle. B, you need a camping chair at the most. C, anything, a water bottle or a backpack is fine, or other. So what's your thought?
Oh, well, I'm from Chicago. You have to have at least a chair. It's a chair.
In Chicago, we have this thing called dibs, mm-hmm. where when you get snowed in and you go shovel your campsite, your parking spot out.
It feels like a campsite.
You go shovel your parking, so your on-street parking site out. A lot of people would put
a chair,
a folding chair or card table out on that parking spot, and that's called dibs, and you're saving it.
Yeah, and if you come back and somebody has moved your chair and put their car there, not responsible for what happens to your car. So I say at least a chair. I think a water bottle and a backpack is not acceptable.
So 16.4% said a camping chair is enough. 66.3% said you need to have a tent or an RV or a car, a vehicle of some sort on that site.
Fair. Okay. I understand that. I guess, you know, they've already paid for it. Cause I'm thinking like, well, what about our van friends who, when they leave, a lot of times they'll take the van with
them. Sometimes they got little signs that they stick out on there. Yeah.
They leave a couple of chairs there. But by that time though, they have paid for the site and it's got the card on it.
I think we've moved beyond this actually, because you arrive at a first come first serve campsite now, for the most part, you're paying for that site and they're somehow marking that site as not available.
You're paying for it online most of the time. Yeah. It's very unusual anymore if you're walking up to a board and paying by check or cash or whatever and then taking a card over. I mean, or you're going up to the office.
Yeah, that's how they do it here at our mm-hmm. county parks, is we will go up to the office and pay for the, you have to park in the site first, and then you go up to the office and pay for the site, and then they give you the card back to put on the post that says the date that you're gone. Now, there's going to be some campgrounds that are still, you know, they're out in the middle of nowhere. There's nobody manning them that aren't doing this.
Well, was it Solduck that you had to still pay at a board?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Soul Duck still does that. But I mean, here at our county park, you can actually take the time to get the rig in and get set up. They're not going to give you grief about that. So you can get the campgrounds, like your
campsite. They want you to, because they don't want a situation where you like go up to the office and pay while somebody else pulls into that site.
Right. So, you know, we can pull in, we can get the rig set up and unhooked, and then we go up and we pay.
Yeah. So, I think this is an operational issue in certain places. Like it shouldn't really be a problem.
Yeah. Why is it our fault?
Yeah.
I mean, like, if you don't want us leaving things there, then make it easier.
There is an issue with, even if you've got like a card on the site or whatever, there is an issue with people taking first come first sites, first serve sites that are already taken. I know van campers often have a problem with this.
Yeah.
When they pull away, they don't want to leave, you know, their camping chair behind that's going to blow away.
Part of the problem too is a lot of these first come first served sites are also in areas where cell service can be little to no. So like it's Soul Duck, for instance. Yeah. Okay. You can't just scan a QR code or pay right there at your site. You are going to have to physically do something that reserves that site. And so there is that issue where even if you get that card and you are a van camper and you leave and you take the van and you go, yes, you're absolutely right. You could come back and someone could be in that site. Now, obviously, there's a record that you've paid for it, but now it becomes a thing. And I don't know that there's a good solution to it. I mean, if anyone watching or listening has a good solution to those kinds of situations where cell service is, you know, sort of non-existent and you're having to do a little bit more of an old school reservation system for first come, first served, drop it in the comments. Maybe someone, you never know who's watching or reading.
I mean, even at Soul Duck, like there was the board, but the board marked off the sites that were not available.
Right. But it didn't have our name on it, right?
No, but it was marked as paid and not available. And the camp host cleared out the ones that weren't paid.
But anyone, like if it was a van person and they drove off.
Yeah.
Because it just.
It was still marked on the board that that campsite wasn't available, but somebody might.
But somebody could. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's always a way around it. Like,
So what percentage of people do you think reported using all of their reservations in 2025?
I'm going to say 41%.
Whoa, that's low. Wow. It's 72.9% of people used all their reservations. I mean, I think you have to remember a lot of people are only camping, you know, a couple times a year.
Right. I was including the 45 to 54 who do not show up the first day of their reservation.
But so that is improved dramatically. So I think this was one of the most interesting stats to me is that campers are showing up to their reservations more. 2023, 58.9%. 2024, 70.7%. 2025, 72.9%.
I think some of that too is as we settle in as RVers, maybe too, some people are not anymore taking the big epic trip. You know, they're camping a little bit more closer to home. They are, you know, doing those weekend trips around town. Like, you know, for us this year, I don't think we're going very far. Like, I think this is a Midwest year for us.
Let's be honest. We don't know what the heck we're doing.
No, we don't. But as we look towards, you know, our youngest just started yesterday, was accepted into an art academy here at the art museum. Yeah. And he's going to start studying art. And that's a commitment that will run now until the end of May. And then he will have an opportunity, should he want to do it and get accepted, to study over the summer at some points. And, you know, those are exciting things for our kids to be finding their voices. And, you know, we want them to be able to do that. And I think that some people are starting to find that balance where they can still sort of let the kids, if it's a family, let their kids have their summer camps, let them, you know, continue to explore what their interests are, but get those trips in. And when you can get those trips in closer to home, there is a less of a chance that you're going to cancel. You get everybody gets happy. You go to the campground for a weekend. The number goes up.
So what percentage of people do you think no-showed in 2025? Because I'm assuming this is surveyed because they also surveyed campground owners. I'm assuming this is surveyed through campground owners. I'm also assuming, however, though, that this doesn't have a high percentage of public lands type campsites involved in it, which I think there are more no-shows on those sorts of places because it's more affordable to no-show. But
well, it's clear I don't have my finger on the pulse of this because I really lowballed. I will hope for the best on this one, and I will say 23%.
Only 3.7% of people.
I should have more faith. That would have been me assuming that like almost a quarter of the people that on this survey no showed. That's awful.
That's down 5% from last year. So that's a good stat.
That's good.
However, canceled with less than 2 days notice increased 22%. So that's interesting. It's at 8.39%. So it's still a low number. Yeah. And I think part of that has to do with the fact that it's easier. I mean, if you think back 2 years ago, sometimes it would have been hard to cancel with 2 days notice. There were a lot of public campgrounds 2, 3, 4 years ago that like they just locked everything in 2 days out. And that was it.
Easier than ever to cancel. Now, the cancellation fees in a lot of places have gone up.
Yeah.
But it is still really easy to cancel. It's incredibly easy to cancel on recreation.gov. And then, you know, you lose, depending on when it is, you either lose $10 or you lose $10 in like one night. The same with some campgrounds, private campgrounds. Sometimes I can just email them and they're like, oh, yeah, no problem. You know, sometimes you call and they're like, okay, yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there's just so much of it now. It's very normal. And there's just so much turnaround that I don't think they fret too much that the spot's not going to be filled.
24.7% canceled at least 2 days ahead of time. 16.2% left one or more days early. Basically, most of these numbers have improved, except for the fact that it seems like people are canceling a little bit closer to their reservation dates now. That the number of people that canceled 2+ days ahead of time has gone down 3%. While the number of people who canceled with less than 2 days notice increased 22%. So there's a move towards canceling later.
I wish we had, and I know it's not possible to do it, but I wish there was a little subcategory there that had like 3 or 4 choices for why they canceled.
Maybe that's a better thing because if less people canceled entirely,
yeah,
that would mean to me that more of the cancellations would be later because more of them would be because of an emergency, some event that made them cancel.
Yeah, because we kind of tweaked our Grand Teton Yellowstone reservations when the weather got a little suspect. And we decided to, you know, kind of move some chess pieces around a little bit. And so that was weather related as to why we switched up our camping. And so, you know, for me, it's like, I wish there was just like, was it weather related?
I think weather
is an emergency come up.
The weather is something that KOA explicitly asks in their report. So it'll be interesting to see when that comes out. We know that there have been more extreme weather events over the last several years, and those have certainly impacted people's camping reservations significantly.
I would say the bulk of our last minute camping reservations have been weather related.
Whether it just affects your travel where you're going or you just don't want to camp. Right. That's going to be a lot of people that are not like traveling long distance. If I booked a local campground and the weather was going to be bad that weekend, there's a good chance that I'm going to cancel, right?
Yeah.
So that is the DIRTS 2026 camping report covering camping in 2025. If you'd like to take a look at it, there's more stuff in there. We'll put a link to it in the comments. It's sponsored by Toyota Trucks. So thanks to the DIRT for putting this together. And thanks for Toyota for putting the money into sponsoring this. And I find this stuff really interesting. But we'd love to know from you in the comments, if you're watching this on YouTube, what you think about particularly the cancellation stuff. Is it okay to book more than you plan to use? Do you cancel stuff regularly? Do you move stuff around a lot? Is that a big part of the way you book and travel? We'd love to hear from you.
And if you're listening to this, we would also love to hear what you think. And if you want to come over to YouTube and just drop a comment in the comment section, we would love to hear from you as well. It is time to check the level of our tanks, and that is sponsored by our friends over at Liquefied RV Toilet Treatment, the no BS toilet treatment. You can find Liquefied over at liquefiedrv.com. Jay, what is in your black tank this week?
Oh, things are not looking good for Eddie Bauer. This is from Business Insider. Catalyst Brands, which owns the license rights to operate Eddie Bauer stores across North America, is prepping for Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing. Sources familiar with the situation told Business Insider Eddie Bauer's roughly 180 stores in the U.S. and Canada would be at risk of closure in the potential Chapter 11 restructuring. And Eddie Bauer is a great brand. It's been around since 1920. It is a shell of itself from what it used to be.
Yes, it is.
They don't manufacture anywhere near what they used to. A lot of the stuff you find in store is not manufactured by Eddie Bauer. A lot of it is a licensed brand. Like we've seen, like Camping World has their Eddie Bauer line of RVs. It's a name that can be paid for. And most of the Eddie Bauer stores are, they're ran by a licensed agency. Actually, I think the mall owners, I have a vague memory of a couple years ago, a big consortium of mall owners bought a big stake in Eddie Bauer. And that's why it is one of the outdoor retail stores that you will usually see in a mall. If you see one in a mall, it's going to be an Eddie Bauer store. Not good news for Eddie Bauer and people who love that brand, and B, not good news for malls.
I feel like it's really inappropriate of you to not mention Pizza Hut, because they were also mentioned in this article.
Pizza Hut was also mentioned.
I think the fact that you just glossed right over Pizza Hut.
So here's the interesting.
Book club kid's worst nightmare right now.
So Pizza Hut is also considering closing
250 stores?
A bunch of stores.
Well, now to go back to Eddie Bauer for a second.
Yeah.
This will be the third time that they have filed bankruptcy in 25 years.
Yeah.
Okay, so whether or not third time is a charm,
the brand name the brand name will still be licensed. But here, the issue here is the fact that the brand, the company that actually runs the mall stores, that all the stores are, that is the company that is facing trouble. The brand name will still exist. We'll still see it on those Camping World RVs.
Yeah.
But it's sad to see the stores because we like shopping at Eddie Bauer stores.
I have like a little sweater jacket thing similar to what I'm wearing today that I bought at the Eddie Bauer in the Minot Mall in 2019 that I still wear every friggin' morning almost when I wake up. It's like I just grab it and put it on. And I've been wearing that thing for almost 7 years now.
It's a tough time for retail.
Very
obviously
tough
the time. Pizza Hut thing, like, I don't know. The thing about Pizza Hut is like, who goes and eats in a Pizza Hut anymore?
Is there even?
That's why like somebody like Domino's or Little Caesars does a little bit better, I think, because their stores are much smaller footprint because you're not eating in them.
They were saying that in that article that the like Papa Murphy's and Domino's and Pizza Huts were really being kind of like killed by the Papa John's, which I don't like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't like Papa John's.
I don't like Papa John's. I don't like that.
There was a period.
Papa Murphy's.
There's a period where I loved Papa John's. And then I realized
that period was so short.
And then I realized I hate this pizza. I'm only buying it because it comes with garlic butter. Here's the fun story though. Pizza Hut is owned by Yum Brands.
Yes.
Yum Brands is Kentucky Fried Chicken, Taco Bell.
I'm sorry, excuse Pizza me. Hut. You mean Kentucky Hut?
Yes.
Thank you.
Will you put them all together? Yes. It's a Kentucky
Hut. It's a Kentucky Hut.
Sometimes it's a Taco Hut. Sometimes it's a
Kentucky. A Kentucky.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen that. But maybe I have. I think I have.
You know, pizza and chicken.
Yeah. So here's a fun story. Somebody I used to date.
Your ex-fiance?
Yes.
Okay. Here we go.
Her uncle was the CEO of Young Brands.
Get out of here.
And I didn't know this until I went with her to their family reunion, which was like down in like Eastern Missouri. it was so weird because he was like a complete fish out of water. And like people kept like there, this was a big family reunion, one with like, you know, a couple hundred people. Like it felt like you're going to a large wedding. And people kept like on microphone thanking him for like the treats he brings to the world.
Were they asking him if he had any gift cards on him?
It was very funny.
Any chance you've got a Taco Bell gift card on you? Yeah. Uncle Yum? Okay, what's in your fresh tank this week?
My fresh tank is loves truck stops. We've been talking about truck stops a lot recently, which is interesting in and of itself. But loves truck stops. They have been on a tear building new stores. In 2026, Love's plans to invest $700 million in building new locations and remodeling existing ones. They plan to open 23 new Love's RV stops. So if you're somebody that likes to stay at the Love's RV stops, there's going to be a heck of a lot more of those. More than half of Love's locations will be newly constructed or remodeled by 2035. So over the course of the next 9 years, they plan to build new and reconstruct half of their stores.
Wow.
So I think that's really interesting. And that their focus on RVers, you know, we can argue whether that the cost is worth it, but the focus on RVers and their move from calling these truck stops to travel stops and for it to be kind of a for everyone type situation is something that I really like.
I wonder if Arby's is on the chopping block.
There's a lot of Arby's at Love's.
Just saying. Do you think Arby's is going to survive the remodel? Sometimes a roast beef sandwich just hits.
Arby's I got a love-hate reason. It's simultaneously the least greasy and most greasy fast food restaurant. Because like, the roast beef sandwiches, like not too greasy. That's better than a hamburger for me sometimes. But then like the curly fries is like a ball of grease.
But that Arby's sauce, you put that on that roast beef sandwich. That's so good. Call me later. It's like, so good. Don't talk to me. I've
gotten to the point where like I used to be like, it's similar to the Papa John's. I used to be like, oh, I'm going to Arby's because of the curly fries.
No, what?
No more. I don't even get fries now. Now I just get two roast beef sandwiches.
You're going to be like, I just get a roast beef sandwich. No. You're like, no,
I got two.
I get that two for six.
But I don't do the beef and cheddar. This is the thing. The discount is always on the beef and cheddar.
Nobody wants that.
I don't want the nacho cheese sauce on there.
With the onion bun? Nobody wants that.
I'm cool with the onion bun.
No, you got to get the sesame seed bun. What's wrong with you?
I don't want the liquid cheese.
What's happening?
What is in your black tank this week?
So my black tank is actually something that happened this morning that is both kind of a black tank and a fresh tank because it ended up working out okay. But I think Amtrak, you know, get it together. So our son, Jack, went up to Chicago this weekend to film and hang out with his friends. And so he took the Amtrak up. And so our nearest Amtrak is about, 45-minute drive or something from here. So he was going to grab the 11:20 and head up to Chicago. And so I'm driving him up there. And at first it says that the train is delayed, like when we left. And it says being delayed to 11:28. And we're like, okay, that's fine.
A few minutes, not a big deal.
That's totally normal. So we're going, we get there, we arrive, and it's 11:15. So we arrive 13 minutes early. You don't have to get a ticket. He has his e-ticket. They scan it when you get on the Amtrak. It's really similar to like riding the Metra, if you've done that in the Chicago area. But when we pull in, I'm like, hey, there's a train here. I was like, I wonder if your train is here already. And I kind of see like people milling around like the cars, like they're kind of getting in. And I'm like, let's go, let's grab your stuff quick. Let's go and let's go to the ticket counter and see what's going on. Well, there was nobody at the ticket counter. Nobody in there. And I walk in and I was sad because the Galesburg Amtrak looks like no one has paid attention to it in many years, which makes me very sad because Galesburg is a really quaint little downtown. And that's, you know, it's always been where we catch the train from the Quad Cities.
It's annoying because it's a little far away from here.
It's annoying, but we are now getting our own
Theoretically, finally,
it's 20 years plus in the making, but supposedly Amtrak has come into the Quad Cities. So anyway, I happen to see, I don't know, someone someone who is wearing an Amtrak uniform walks in and is yelling something about baggage. Did anyone have baggage or something? And no one's answering her. So she's going to turn around and leave. And I said, excuse me, ma'am, is this the 1128 heading to Chicago? And she said, no, that one is severely delayed. If you want to go to Chicago, you better go get on that one right now. And I'm like, oh, okay, so that's not the 1128 then? And she's like, no, you need to go get on that train. They're leaving. Like, you need, and I'm like, okay, Jack, we got to run. So Jack and I take off at a run. We're running across the tracks. We're heading, because, you know, trying to get to the train. The conductor's all the way down at the very end of the train. Jack and I are running. And, you know, he's closing up, and we get to him, and I say, hey, he's got a ticket for the 1128, but the woman up here, she told us we need to get on this one. And he said, yeah, that's fine, you can get on. He says, you know, let me scan your ticket really quick and make sure. Scans Jack's ticket, and he says, yeah, you're good to go. Jack hops on, all is well, and he gets on and he takes off. And I go back into the train station, the depot, and No text, because I checked with Jack later. Like, did you get some updates on this? His train had been delayed till 4:43 p.m.
Wow.
5 hours. And so all I can surmise is that the train he got on was the 7:30 in the morning train, because there's only three trains to Chicago out of Galesburg: the morning, the late afternoon, and the evening train.
Yeah.
And so, thankfully, we showed up when we did, because we weren't like rushing. I had stopped at a rest area to use the bathroom because, of course, I had to stop and use the restroom. We thought it's 11:28. He's going to get right on the train. You know, we hadn't seen any updates. Everything is good. If we had been 1 minute later, 1 minute, I would have been driving that kid to Chicago today. And that is not what I wanted to spend my day doing.
Fun times.
Yeah, so it's just unfortunate, because it seems like the Amtrak prices are going up and up. But
the service is not.
But everything else about Amtrak, I didn't feel the greatest putting my kid on this Amtrak today. But, you know, he sent me a text when he got to. When he got there, he's fine. He's going to have the greatest weekend. He's so thrilled to be up in Chicago. He's going to make a film with his friends. He's going to have the best time. To be 18 again. I'm so excited for him.
What's in your fresh tank?
Okay, so my fresh tank this week is a book recommendation. So I am on a quest this year. I'm calling it 47 by 47. So I have a goal to read 47 books by the end of 2026 to commemorate turning 47 this year.
I was going to say, because you turn 47 at the end of August.
Yes, but I didn't start it in August. So it's 2026. Okay. 47 by 47 is what I'm calling it. I'm recommending it already, even though I'm only 2/3 of the way through it, but it's so good. And we have waited so long for it. So I'm reading Dan Brown's Secrets of Secrets, and it is the fourth, I think, in the, Da Vinci. So Dan Brown wrote like Da Vinci Code, right? This book is so good. It was worth the wait. I love it. I don't want to say a lick about it. I think that Dan Brown is one of the most intriguing, smartest, just amazing weaving storytellers, where you think there is no way that this can be true. And then you go and look and you're like, oh my goodness, according to the interwebs, it is true. I mean, it's phenomenal, like the research that he does and the tales that he can tell. It's a great book. I'm not going to say anything more about it, because you just have to experience it for yourself. But if you are looking for a read that you are going to fly through, I literally started this book 3 days ago.
I look forward to seeing the Tom Hanks movie.
Is it
the same character?
It is. Okay. It is Robert. I do not know, because it does not, from what I can tell, the timeline.
Oh, it's not later.
It is not a timeline. It's
10 years older.
No. Yeah. It is.
That could be a problem.
Yeah.
It's going to be.
You know, I didn't like the movies like I liked.
Yeah, I didn't like Tom Hanks' hair in the movies.
Oh, well, I mean, I don't understand that. Again, another one of those movies where like a facial feature just totally overtakes the whole movie. I don't get it. Anyway, it's a great book. I highly recommend it. It's a great campground weekend read.
That's it for this week's episode of the RV Miles podcast.
Yes, it is. Thank you so much for joining us. And hey, just a reminder, if you would like to support the work we do here, not only on the podcast, but with our news videos, our RV life videos, we'd love to invite you to become a Mile Marker member. Mile Markers support everything we do here, including this beautiful studio that I wish you all could see. The amazing work that Jason has done. We can see the light at the end of the tunnel, which means so many of you that this wall of windows drives crazy each and every week. For those of you that are watching this, these are going to go away soon. And
I'm still going to use them sometimes.
You don't sometimes, but the people who walk by that just that catch your eye.
Now we're just going to upset people because there's some people that love watching the people walking.
Well, we can't please everybody, but we'll put something on a TV that just will occasionally have people walk past for them. How about that? But if you would like to support the shenanigans that go on here, we would love that and we would greatly appreciate it because we can't do what we do without that support. So please go over to rvmiles.com/milemarkers. You can become a member for just $7 a month or $70 a year. And all of that money stays right here at RV Miles. So thank you to our Mile Marker members. And until next week, friends, please stay safe, stay healthy, and keep logging those RV miles.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.